in Georgia even before that, and now the Russians are on course to defeat NATO and win in Ukraine as well. And so the U.S. is a fading power, and Biden's abject surrender to the Saudis is a sign of that.
Okay. Talk about money, since I've heard that now in the statements. Lawrence Davidson, it was very shocking, in a sense, for many, when the Afghanistan war and U.S. occupation there was ongoing, that the Pentagon comes out and says, we don't even know how much money we have spent, because based on the accounting that took place, they couldn't account for billions of dollars, and I'm talking hundreds of billions of dollars, that was cited in a report. We can go on about that, but I'm curious as to whether these ventures, which all cost money, is about money.
Well, yes, I think that it's a lot of it is about money, and the nature of these ventures essentially creates a sphere or a environment for corruption. I mean, when you are distributing, you know, either in actual dollars or in materiel, millions and millions and millions of dollars per week, some of that is going to generate corruption, and corruption then becomes its own engine. So essentially, if you're not paying attention, or on purpose or otherwise, or if you don't care how the money is spent, then, or how the money ultimately is distributed, then in fact it's an invitation for not being able to account for billions of bucks.
Okay, we got less than 30 seconds here left. Kevin Barrett, former U.S. President Donald Trump, we have spent $7 trillion with a T in the Middle East, as he called it. You know what we have for it? Nothing. Does the U.S. have nothing to show for it in the Middle East or West Asia, as we call it?
Pretty much, yeah. Once again, Trump may mislie, and he's certainly not a reliable source. He's not very knowledgeable, but he speaks a lot of truth that nobody else is willing to speak that directly. He's absolutely right. Yeah, we spent $7 trillion and actually made our position worse. If the U.S. had just gotten out and stopped spending money on the region completely, rather than doing all these crazy things since the 9/11 false flag, we could have saved $7 trillion, okay, and we would actually have a better position in the region right now for not being there.
Thank you, Kevin Barrett, editor at Veterans Today, and thank you, Lawrence Davidson, emeritus professor at Westchester University. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitahue and the team, it's goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be examining a question which is kind of asked regarding one of the virtues of one of our a'imma alayhimus salam, Imam Baqir alayhi salam. As you know, Imam Baqir alayhi salam is known as Baqirul Ulum. That's his title, that's his epithet. And that name or that title, it literally translates as the person who opens up or who kind of cultivates knowledge. And so the question we want to ask within the context of the meaning of this title of the fifth imam is this, that if the imam, alayhi salam, is really the person who cultivates knowledge, then why is it that no kind of invention or no kind of innovation has been created by him? Or why haven't we heard of anything, him having created anything or made something important or significant or invention and so on and so forth? I mean, usually today, when we think of somebody as very learned or having a lot of knowledge, right, there's some sort of practical or tangible creation that such a person has created. They take that as a testament to the fact that such a person was knowledgeable and important and significant in the field of knowledge. This then is the question we want to ask. We can answer this question in a lot of different ways, right? But today, the way we want to answer this question is this, that the person asking this question is kind of under the impression and in the back of his mind, as a general law, he's of the opinion that if somebody has knowledge, he has to have invented something, right? And by invention, we mean something physical, tangible, right, that has some sort of material benefit, worldly benefit for human beings, right? And specifically in the back of his mind, therefore, he has the idea that this person should be learned in the fields of the experimental sciences. Whereas this assumption is wrong and is not generally true. Right? The reason for this is that we have a lot of different sciences that are not experimental in nature. And in fact, these are more significant and more important and then those material sciences. And these and progress and superiority in these sciences, it's not manifested in the form of a tangible product which is produced by the person with that knowledge or who has an expertise in that knowledge. This is why the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam has been narrated that he said, "Afdalul ilm, la ilaha illallah." Right? The greatest of sciences or the highest form of knowledge is the belief or the this proposition that there is no God but God. Also, the Imam alayhi salam has been narrated to have said that the knowledge of God is the most important and the most significant of all knowledge. Abbaluddin ma'rifatuh. This is a narration from Imam Ali alayhi salam. The foremost of all knowledge, the head of all knowledge, is the knowledge of God. Right? And the perfection of that is to affirm him. And the perfection of that affirmation is the belief in his monotheism. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at whether the idea that Imam Baqir alayhi salam did not have any innovation or invention is a contradiction to his being the most knowledgeable of people of his era. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul. Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Cheongwa-dae, South Korea's Blue House, is now open to the public. The presidential office has moved, with the former grounds becoming a park and popular attraction. The move was finalized just weeks before incoming President Yoon Suk-yeol's inauguration. The new office is in South Korea's Ministry of National Defense, adjacent to a U.S. military base, with the government this week opening a park there on a 10-day trial. President Yoon moved the presidential office to leave behind what he called the era or symbol of imperial power and get closer to the people. It's been suggested that visitors to this park will be able to see the president working in his fifth-floor office. Just one problem. The park is polluted with toxins in the soil and groundwater many times the levels otherwise considered safe. An environmental catastrophe a long time in the making, say activists.
These facilities have never been restored from their use by the Japanese Army and then the U.S. Army. You can find the boiler tubes and pipelines, which have decayed underground, leaking oil, resulting in the gradual accumulated contamination of the soil, not just from 1 or 2 years, but over decades.
The U.S. base is in the process of returning to South Korean control. According to government surveys, benzene, xylene, and other hydrocarbons, as well as arsenic and cancer-causing dioxins, have been detected at harmful levels in more than 60% of the area.
After the entire U.S. base is returned, they should execute a detailed investigation into how contaminated it is and establish a plan to clean up the pollution. And after the cleanup is carried out and verified, then the park can finally be built. According to the original government plan, it'll take about 7 years.
The Yoon administration plans to open the park fully in September and feature an American-themed culture zone, or Little L.A. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Scads of emails to FIFA and no answers yet. Following the Canadian national soccer team's pullout from a planned match with Iran, pressures have been heaping on Canada's footballing body, Canada Soccer, for what Iranian sports authorities regard as unsportsmanlike and illegal. They have been trying different ways to reach FIFA for answers, but to no avail.
In several attempts, I tried to contact FIFA to ask for an interview with its chief executive officer, but there was no response. I also emailed their media department, but so far we have received no answer.
The Iran match was due to take place on June 5th in Vancouver as a preparatory friendly in the lead-up to the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar. But 9 days ahead of the game, Canada Soccer canceled the fixture, citing untenable geopolitical situation of hosting Iran. The exhibition match was called off days after Prime Minister Justin Trudeau criticized Canada Soccer for its decision to host Iran.
It's a pity that a country like Canada, which claims to be committed to the separation of politics from sports, so openly disregards this principle and mixes up political hostilities against Iran with the sport. It's definitely a violation of the FIFA regulations.
Days later, Team Canada set another match with Panama to replace the Iran contest. But to everyone's surprise, that game too was called off at the 11th hour. This time, Canada Soccer cited payment disputes raised by the Canadian players as the reason why the Panama match was canceled. To Iran's sports ministry, Canada's flip-flopping is against the FIFA regulations and deserves punishment.
Our colleagues at the Iranian Football Federation are following up on the legal pursuit of the case. We are currently writing to the Canadian Soccer Association to seek a convincing answer regarding why they committed such a move. We will then take the case to FIFA to seek psychological and financial compensation for Canada's illegal action.
The Iran match was a golden chance for the 38th-ranked Canadian men to test their performance against a team that ranks 21st in the world. Now with the World Cup looming, and just 4 years prior to serving as co-host of the 2026 Men's World Cup, Canada Soccer has embroiled itself in a crisis that has the potential of leaving indelible scars on Canada's sport and its image in the world.
3 weeks after Canada soccer's controversial move, the backlash is yet to subside. IRWA says it's seriously following up on its legal pursuit to seek damages, and that has raised speculations about the possibility of the case being taken to the Court of Arbitration for Sports, known as CAS. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Humanitarian aid being loaded into a lorry. I'm heading with pro-Russian volunteers to a village near the front line, which is constantly under shelling in order to deliver much-needed supplies. Despite the destruction all around, incredibly, people still live here. We stop off next to the final checkpoint. Beyond is no man's land, the grey zone between the opposing armies. Artillery can be heard. It's unclear whether it's Russian or Ukrainian.
Now it is from both sides. Artillery duels. And we're in the middle. The shells are flying over our heads. And they might fall here. So let's just gradually move away.
Pieces of shrapnel like this are supposed to hit us. This one is small. They're bigger ones. Look how sharp it is. They cut through flesh like a sieve. These are Ukrainian gifts to our children. They're different shapes and sizes. You could keep it as a souvenir from Donbass.
Unexpectedly in this wasteland, a bus pulls up. The man tells me his house was destroyed yesterday. He shows me his wounds. I asked him why he's come back. To get some documents and feed his cat, he says. A crowd is gathered at the drop-off point, hungry for the humanitarian aid.
There was that video showing a woman from Western Ukraine sitting on the road embracing her two children and asking, how could it be so that her house was destroyed by Russian shelling? She should ask the woman whose three children died in a bathroom from Ukrainian shelling how she felt. I also have children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. I want to live in peace here in Donbass, not watch all this going on.
It's noticeable here that most people are women and children. The men have joined the armies. Now, the front line is only a few hundred meters away. There's a lot of emotion here, understandably, about this war. Some people here even tell me they have cousins who are fighting in the Ukrainian army, while their sons and husbands are fighting for the pro-Russians. This war has divided the country. It's also divided villages like this.
My son died on the 3rd of November. He'd been on the front line for 8 years. He went there in 2014 as a volunteer, and now he's dead. What for, I ask, what for?
Those who remain don't leave because it's their home, and they have nowhere else to go. They tell me this used to be a pleasant place to live. The same can be said of many other parts of Ukraine. The longer this war goes on, the more of this pleasant land will be destroyed. Johnny Miller, Donbass.
Ahead of a planned visit by U.S. President Joe Biden to the region next month, Israeli media revealed that the American administration had raised the possibility of holding a meeting between the Palestinian Authority and Israel, but the Palestinians have rejected the idea. According to the Israeli daily Haaretz, the Palestinians informed the Americans that they would only accept such a meeting if all parties agreed on advancing a two-state solution based on the 1967 borders.
The Biden administration, with its offer to have a kind of a meeting between the Palestinians and the Israelis, is trying just to get out of the hook. It's trying to say that they are interested in doing something in the area. At the same time, what they are offering is just a kind of a arrangement, economic arrangements, make life a little bit much better under the occupation. Now, the Palestinian Authority and the Palestinians in general are aiming at ending the occupation and establishing a Palestinian state.
The Palestinians, however, want from the Americans to reopen the U.S. consulate in East Al-Quds and to remove the Palestine Liberation Organization, PLO, from the U.S. terror list. These demands had been made during a meeting between Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas and Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs Barbara Leaf in Ramallah.
Biden's visit carries with it many risks, including shaping the situation in the region in favor of U.S. interests and those of Israel. We have demanded from the U.S. some issues that it can make unilaterally and don't require hollow meetings. it's clear the U.S. will be ignoring the major cause, which is the Palestinian cause.
On Tuesday, the White House confirmed Biden's first trip to West Asia region next month, during which he will visit the occupied Palestine, followed by a trip to Saudi Arabia. Israel's foreign minister has said that his country was looking to Biden's trip next month to help improve relations with Saudi Arabia.
U.S. President Joe Biden is planning a visit to Saudi Arabia as part of the Riyadh summit. Biden says he will be focusing on Israel as a key issue for talks during his Saudi visit. Palestinians, on the other hand, say the Biden's visit to the region would only be symbolic. Mona Kandil, Occupied Ramallah.
The EU is Britain's largest trading partner by some distance, and the UK is the EU's third largest customer for goods. Therefore, there's a great deal to lose if relations continue to deteriorate.
This is illegal.
The 27-nation bloc is furious at plans by the British government to rip up the post-Brexit trade agreement relating to Northern Ireland agreed in 2020. Apparently, Boris Johnson's proposals would create a mountain of paperwork for businesses in Northern Ireland.
I mean, go and ask... the milk producers in Northern Ireland, how he or she can produce the milk, one sort for EU, another one for the UK, or any kind of manufacturer who wants to benefit from the access to both markets of the UK and the EU.
Brussels is taking London to court for not fulfilling the terms of the so-called Northern Ireland Protocol. The mechanism is designed to prevent border checks between the North and the Republic of Ireland, thereby avoiding the potential for sectarian violence. The United States is siding with the EU on this issue, which means London has limited options when it comes to finding new, big trading partners. Currently, just 15% of UK exports go to the US. And according to analysts, it would take years for London and Washington to agree on a new trade deal. EU leaders simply do not trust the British government any longer. Analysts have been surprised by the bloc's unity throughout the Brexit process after the EU spelled out its red lines.
And the EU has been very consistent in keeping to those red lines, probably more unified than anyone expected. Whereas on the other side, we have seen huge divisions.
This protocol presents for Northern Ireland.
It's been suggested, for political reasons, Johnson cannot back down now, and therefore it would ultimately require a change of government in London to avoid a trade war. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Grounded right before takeoff from a military airport in southwest England, as the legal wrangling over the fate of those due to be deported played out. The crew of the £500,000 taxpayer-funded flight to Rwanda soon realized they weren't going anywhere, as an 11th-hour intervention by the European Human Rights Council granted a reprieve to most of the seven Middle Eastern asylum seekers on board, to the delight of critics of the government's immigration policy.
I was delighted. It really instilled my confidence in the judicial system, that people could actually pick out favourable politics and look behind that and identify potential breaches of human rights.
A defiant UK Prime Minister, though, says he is pushing on with his policy and that he may now contemplate withdrawing from the European Convention on Human Rights.
What we want to do is to show the people traffickers that they're breaking the law, they're risking people's lives, and it won't work anyway. Now, will it be necessary to change some laws to help us as we go along? It may very well be.
At the moment, the UK's Interior Ministry forcibly removes anyone it deems inadmissible to claim asylum in the UK on a one-way charter flight to Rwanda, and houses them at facilities like this one in the capital, Kigali. A policy that has drawn fierce criticism from charities to the Church of England to rights activists.
Well, the government argument is they're doing this to put people traffickers out of business. But people such as yourself want the policy scrapped altogether. Why?
Immigration, asylum and human rights are not at the top of the priority of this government's way of working with others, you know, less fortunate than themselves. We see the situation in Rwanda as being dressed up as something that it's absolutely not. I still have clients who are Rwandan refugees.
The UK has reportedly paid cash-strapped Rwanda $148 million up front for the deportation deal and plans on making additional payments to the East African country based on the number of asylum seekers it deports.
The UK government says it's ready to do anything, including changing the law to make those deportation flights happen. But for now, a respite for desperate asylum seekers facing a terrifying future. Saeed Bouriza, London.
Senior U.S. advisor for energy security Amos Hochstein met high-ranking Lebanese officials in Beirut. During the talks, Lebanese officials said conditions for talks are confidential, but stressed their main demand is Lebanon maintain its right to defend its natural resources.
For the Lebanese government, the point 29 will be considered as a negotiation point, and the 23 point will be considered as the realistic point that will draw the Lebanese borders over the sea.
The conflict over petrol and gas fields began more than 10 years ago when the U.S. proposed so-called Hough Line, which is lower than Line 23, stripping Lebanon of some 860 square kilometers. President Michel Aoun, Prime Minister Mikati, and Speaker Nabih Berri all stressed a unified stance for Lebanon that the country will not concede its right to begin drilling offshore.
Because of the American embargo over on Lebanon, we could not drill for our rights to extract our gas and oil. Because we have to be delayed until the Israeli and the Zionist entity to extract their wealth before us. Therefore, the American negotiator is taken aside, and it's very obvious that they are not negotiating for our benefit, but for the benefit of our enemy.
A recent move by Israel to attempt drilling in the Karish field, which falls within Line 29, has led to opposition from Beirut. Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah has also warned the floating petrol company Energean against drilling in that area as long as it is disputed, and also cautioned that Israeli drilling could reach depths closer to potentially gas-rich Lebanese fields. Lebanon's main dilemma now is that time is running out and its natural resources could be looted at any time. Analysts believe the officials need to firstly demand that the U.S. lift its undeclared blockade and allow contracted companies to implement their obligations and drill in purely Lebanese fields. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The battle for Donbass. Russia has air and artillery superiority. By some accounts, they are pounding Ukrainian positions with 50,000 shells a day. Particularly terrifying are their thermobaric missiles. They cause massive fireballs and suck out the oxygen from the surrounding air. The Ukrainians are well dug in places. These weapons can penetrate their trenches with devastating effect. The Guardian newspaper reports that between 600 and 1,000 Ukrainian soldiers are being killed or wounded every day. A horrific loss of human life and strategically unsustainable. The Russians, too, are thought to have had high casualties. It has been a long time since they have released their figures, but it is they who are moving forward slowly but surely. Peace talks broke down early on in the conflict. Both sides have had little interest in them since.
People have been dying here for years. We have thousands of infrastructure items destroyed. What about could we talk to Ukraine about now? And what Ukraine are we talking to? The one that is a terrorist state? There's no logic and no sense in negotiating with terrorists, for they'll be constantly changing their demands and trying to turn them in their favor. There have been negotiations from the beginning of liberation operation, and as you can see, it ends in nothing.
President Zelensky has made clear that he is not interested in talks unless Russia withdraws to the territory it held before February 24th. With Russia on the front foot on the battlefield, this will not happen.
We don't say this operation is against Ukraine, for it's actually NATO who are fighting against our republics now, the collective West. It's now some kind of front line of good and evil. That's why we might be ready to negotiate. The question is, what about? Ukraine has sold its people and its sovereignty to the West against the interest of its population. So these negotiations are with who and about what?
Now, just as Russia has massive political
control over the Donetsk People's Republic and the Luhansk People's Republic, so does NATO have huge political control over Ukraine. It arms them, it funds them. And so when negotiations start and what terms will be on offer in negotiations, we're very much down to NATO's decisions rather than Ukrainian government's.
The head of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, recently said,
President Zelensky has stated many times this war will end at the negotiating table. The question is, what kind of position will the Ukrainians have when they negotiate a solution? Our responsibility is to make that position as strong as possible. We know that there is a very close link between what you can achieve at the negotiating table and your position on the battlefield. So our military support to them is a way to strengthen their hand.
Hundreds of soldiers, both Ukrainian and Russian, are being slaughtered every day in Donbass so that their governments have a better hand at the negotiating table. Civilians on both sides are dying too. A mother and her 11-year-old child yesterday in Donetsk, killed by shelling of a market. Meanwhile, global leaders warn of a catastrophic global food crisis due to the conflict. Peace is still a long way off, and it looks set to be achieved on the battlefield. Johnny Miller, Donbass.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
If saving trillions of dollars and millions of lives isn't enough to end political bribery in America, what will it take? Says Tom Hartman, author, in an article published under the heading, How many billions in profit is it worth to kill 212,000 Americans a year? Stay tuned for more. Senator Bernie Sanders and Senator Lindsey Graham had a debate on Fox Nation. Sanders asked, In the United States, Lindsey, we spend twice as much per capita on health care compared to the people of any other country, while major countries like Canada, UK, Germany manage to supply health care to older people. Why is that? The simple answer is the same reason Americans have an ongoing climate crisis and a student loan crisis that Republicans refuse to let Congress address.
the legal bribery of politicians like Lindsey Graham. How much money would it take to bribe you to help kill 212,000 Americans in a single year? What size incentive would cause you to assist in the theft of $543.6 billion? It's a serious question. These are real numbers. The bribery is real. The debts are real. The thefts from the American people, most extracted from individual families, are real. The real people, American lobbyists offering the bribes, and real people, American legislators taking the bribes to make choices that killed 212,000 Americans in 2020 while picking over $543 billion from American taxpayers' pockets. According to Open Secrets, the amount spent just last year bribing Congress to keep U.S. healthcare system in place was almost three-quarters of $1 billion. In exchange, the health insurance industry took home $19 billion in profits last year. Hospitals took home over $70 billion in profits, and the pharmaceutical industry made similarly huge profits last year, at least $100 billion. And that was after each of these three industries that have a stake in keeping U.S. healthcare system as broken and dysfunctional as possible had handed out billions in compensation to their senior executives and board members, not to mention stockholder dividends. So the healthcare industry made out well. Its executives are buying third and fourth mansions in Swiss Alps. Its lobbies are enjoying their time. And the politicians it owns are becoming multimillionaires. In every other developed country in the world, the national healthcare system helps keep costs in line, be they hospital or pharmaceutical. Health insurance in other nations is a marginal business around the edges used almost exclusively by the very wealthy to get private air ambulances and luxury suites in hospitals. Drugs cost as little as a tenth of what they do in the U.S., and everybody in other developed nations has health coverage. Last year, over 500,000 families were destroyed by bankruptcies caused by a family member getting sick. Every single one was in the United States of America. This is an unknown problem in every other developed nation on planet Earth. But how are Americans doing? A new peer-reviewed study published recently in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences lays out a damning picture of the damage caused by roughly $700 million a year the healthcare industry uses to bribe American legislators. We estimated, the study's authors say in the study's abstract, that a single-payer universal healthcare system would have saved about 212,000 lives in 2020 alone. We also calculated that $105.6 billion of medical expenses associated with COVID-19 hospitalization could have been averted by a single-payer universal healthcare system over the course of the pandemic. These economic benefits are, in addition to $438 billion expected to be saved by single-payer universal healthcare during a non-pandemic year. Since five corrupt Republicans on the Supreme Court legalized bribery of politicians in a shocking series of decisions with no parallel anywhere else in the developed world, Democrats have tried repeatedly to end this deadly ripoff. In April of 1976, the year of the Supreme Court's first decision legalizing bribery of politicians and only of politicians, presidential frontrunner Jimmy Carter proposed a national health insurance system. As president, he faced fierce resistance from paid-off politicians, most but not all Republicans, and ended up settling for small changes around the edges. In 1993, Bill Clinton tried again to extend health coverage to all Americans and rein in costs with a national system. He too failed to overcome opposition from the industry and their bribed politicians. Barack Obama campaigned on a single-payer universal system like Canada, but had to settle for the Affordable Care Act because of the $1,182,700,000 health insurance industry had given Senator Joe Lieberman, in addition to millions to virtually all the Republicans. Obamacare, particularly after five Republicans on the Supreme Court got it, its Medicaid expansion provision turned out to be a $1 trillion gift to the insurance and drug industries. The bribes are so extensive, so widespread, so lavish, that Biden hasn't yet even seriously brought up the topic of Medicare for All or something like it. The U.S. healthcare system let over 200,000 Americans die in 2020 just to preserve its profits. It handed part of those profits to politicians to keep the system in place. And somehow, those politicians sleep at night and can look themselves in the mirror. A national single-payer healthcare system would save Americans trillions of dollars and millions of lives every decade. It's opposed by every single elected Republican and a handful of Democrats. Every one of them on the take to keep things the way they are. If saving trillions of dollars and millions of lives isn't enough, end political bribery in America. What will it take?
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, sisters and brothers from every nook and cranny of the earth. Wherever you are, I hope you're doing well and everything is just fine with you. This is IRIB English Radio and here is your favorite realm. Welcome to the cozy corner of Youth Station. A member of this station, your friend Asma, is at your service. And here, on my side, I have my dear friend and my bestie, Zainab.
Assalamu alaikum, Asma.
Wa alaikum assalam. I'm very happy to meet you here, Zainab.
Same here. I am super excited to see you after a very long time.
After such a long time.
Yes. How are you?
Thank you. It's just good. How are you?
Alhamdulillah.
How are you doing?
Well. Alhamdulillah.
Let's plunge into the heart of our discussion for today's episode, which is about how to meet your Lord. In this world, is there any way to find your Lord, your God in this world?
Well, Asma, I think there are a lot many ways to do that.
Really?
Yes, everyone is eager to like see God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, since I had been a child, I've been asking this question so many times to my parents. Where is God? I want to see him. Please tell me where he is.
That's a normal question every child would ask.
Every child would ask. And even if you, when you grow older, and you don't find him, you don't know him, there is this question, your soul telling him, please, man, I want to see God.
Yes, where are you?
Where are you? I want to see you.
Yes, but as you get older, Zainab, there no longer exists such a question because you have made sure that there is someone protecting you. And his eyes never sleep. He's always with you. Yet, maybe, sometimes you come to this point that I know you exist. Just show me some evidence.
Show me some signs.
Yes, show me some signs. I just want to make sure, just like how the prophet Moses tells to Allah, show me some signs just for my heart to make sure.
Yes.
That is very beautiful. But as we are younger...
That shows that even prophets have been very, very
exactly,
curious.
Exactly, yes. And that's very nice, you know. It also is a sign of loving too much. When you love someone too much, you want them to...
You want to see that person.
Manifest themselves to you on and on.
So have you ever seen God in this world?
See, Zainab, when a little baby is born, that smells like heaven. That little child, that little baby smells like heaven. And it's a miracle, but because it happens many times, nobody cares about it. It has been such a normal thing, but every time I see it, it's like a new miracle for me.
All right.
That is one time. Also, when a diseased person gets healed,
all right,
I feel that God is there.
All right. Well, yes, I think these are the places where you feel God exists, but mm-hmm. I feel like I have seen him in nature.
Yes, of
when
course.
When you start, like, when a flower blooms,
whatever
happens...
When the leaves change from a green to yellow.
Now we have a literary person sitting over here. Yes, yes. Just carry on. When we have these stars...
Don't let me go on.
Yeah. We have days turning into night.
Exactly.
You have nights turning into days.
All these natural things
that
are
manifest
sign, yes.
him in each and every mm-hmm. form of nature. When you see the running waters, when you hear
exactly.
that beautiful sound,
when the rain comes down, when it's snowing, everything.
When it's raining, when
exactly.
it's sun, when it's hot, when
yes,
it's cold.
Yes. Zainab, you know what? I will tell you something about my personal experience when I was a child. We had this habit to sleep at the roof of our house.
At the terrace.
Yes. And it was such a nice experience, you know, all those tranquilities.
All right.
And then the sky of the night.
Wow.
And then the moon and then the stars. And then we used to count the stars in order to fall asleep. Also, in those situations, though I was a child, but there was a feeling that mighty power is watching
behind
over me.
Yes, yes.
I was not alone, you know? I felt that somebody is here right beside me.
Whenever I'm on a prayer mat, I don't feel like I'm just doing some lip sync of some Arabic words. I literally feel that I'm talking to my Lord. I'm talking
exactly.
to my God right
yes.
now. So that's the way you can connect to him. Mm-hmm. But he manifests himself in each
in
and
different
everything.
Ways.
When I was studying just the structure of human body in, mm-hmm. in my science, like when I was a science
yes,
student.
Yes, I was a science student
I saw
well.
Him everywhere.
Exactly, yes.
I saw these complicated structures. Mm-hmm. The more complicated structures you go through,
exactly.
the more you get to know about his power.
Yes, using
because,
those
you know,
microscopes show you how
complicated a thing could
the
be.
The world, yes, how complicated.
And you know what? Say, for example, in this world, a person comes in and you have some app. But when you go behind the programming of that app, mm-hmm. you see this is a very complicated programming has been done
exactly.
to provide us with this app. And the more the complicated programming has been done, we get to know about the knowledge of that person. Mm-hmm. We say this person has been very knowledgeable. He was able to, you know, provide us with such a difficult programming to make us accessible, to make us use this app. In the same way, when I was going through the like human body structures, mm-hmm. the heart structure, the eye structure, the ear structure, the every kind of structure I was going through, the cell structure itself, it's so complicated.
So it's so complicated.
Just the human body is so complicated. Like Imam Ali alayhi salam says in one of his speeches, if you make human body into a thread, mm-hmm. if you convert the entire human body into a thread, it will make 3.5 rounds throughout the globe. So just imagine how complicated one mm-hmm. creature is. What about the other creatures? Each and every creature, when you expand
it, is a sign of God. And
it will tell you how knowledgeable he is.
Exactly.
How powerful
Zainab,
he is.
And Zainab, that reminded me of a quote from Imam Ali alayhi salam. He says that, I didn't look at anything unless I see God before that, after that, and meanwhile.
Yes.
That is very beautiful.
That is
and
very
you know,
beautiful.
Ever since I have turned into a grown-up, I usually wonder how come some people say they don't see God.
Maybe you have been ignorant towards, I mean, maybe the one who says this has been ignorant towards the fact he is being manifested in each and every kind of the creature that's in the nature, whatever exists in the nature,
mm-hmm.
he manifests himself in a very, very clear way. What do you think of taking a short break?
Yes.
So let's take a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is the Youth Station, where you can see the God.
This is our discussion for today. We talked about science. We said that human body is itself an evidence.
Yes.
To God, and there you could see God.
Just go through the complicated structures in the nature that exists. Mm-hmm. Just
and also you could see him with your own eyes when you look at the sky, at the nature, at the flowers when they bloom.
Different kind of fishes, different colored fishes.
Yes. The world beneath the ocean.
A world beneath the oceans. Yes. A world over the skies. Exactly. A world around
and
us.
The world within us.
A world within us, definitely.
Which is more important than every other aspect of
this
world.
Yes, of course.
So there's no way for anyone to say that I cannot see God, I guess. Right?
Yes, of course.
I guess the question is more about how to get closer to him and see him in everything, just the way Imam Ali alayhi salam puts it.
Exactly. I would want you to repeat that. That was so beautiful.
Yes. He says it somewhere in his speech that I did not look at anything unless I see Allah before it, after it, and meanwhile.
And meanwhile. That's so, so beautiful. So that is so
touching.
Depth.
Yes. He actually wants us to notice everything.
Yes.
You know, do not look at a tree just as a tree.
Yes.
Because it's not just a physical thing.
See what is it manifesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
See what is it manifesting. And I feel like when it comes to talking to him,
mm-hmm.
I felt extremely closer to him on the night of Qadr.
Exactly. Yes.
That was a time
since
for
it
the
hasn't
first
been
time.
So long from the holy month, but totally in the holy month of Ramadan, he is pretty much closer to you.
Exactly, because all the doors of Shaitan get closed.
Yes,
he gets
chained up.
He's chained up, and yes, you see him more and more closely. He manifests himself in a lot of ways.
It's also a blessing that he must give us to see him in everything we behold, right?
Yeah.
And for that, we have to make a connection.
Of course we have to.
And that connection comes with
the prayers, obviously.
The prayers and following the Prophet and his companions.
And to ponder on the Quran.
Exactly.
To ponder on
so
what
that
is written.
So that also gives you that transparency and that much of easiness to get closer to God and see
to know him more.
Exactly,
to know him more.
Know
because
him
the more
more
you know him, the more you see mm-hmm. him, the more you feel him. Feeling him is much more important than...
And I guess everyone feels him. It's a matter of a shocking thing when somebody tells me they are still hesitant about God and they want to see him. You must, so therefore, we
you
come
see,
to this
you
conclusion.
See a very little seed turning into a bud and then into a plant
yes,
and then
exactly.
into a beautiful tree.
So that little seed is very, very touching material. You know, every time I plant a little seed, I just, and I go back to see it after a month or 2 months and I see how grown up it is.
Yes.
I just ponder upon it.
Ponder upon it. And as he puts himself.
It's a miracle, Zainab.
It is. And he, as he puts himself, like you rightly mentioned in the very beginning, I asked you where you see him and you said in a baby, when a newborn is born. See, he sometimes wants to wake up us from this pride, from this materialistic world when we are lost in our own world. He says, like, don't you remember what I created you from?
Exactly.
I created you from something dirty water and then what it turned into. Mm-hmm. And a human being, when it's like when there is a complete human being formed, he calls himself as Ahsanul Khaliqeen.
The best creator.
The best creator. And, you know, he creates, he even calls man Ashraful Makhlukat.
The best creature.
The best creature among all creatures. So, yes, you know, the best of the creatures is created. And he calls himself the best of the creator after creating the best of the creatures. When you analyze the same best creature, what it was, a dirty water, what it turned into, the best of the creature.
Exactly.
What happened in between was the manifestation of God.
Now, we don't have that much of time, but just to give it the gist, God is available everywhere. You
can everywhere.
See him. You just have to open your eyes. And also, there's another point. Some scientists and those people who believe in technology a lot, they used to say that, okay, these evidences that you're bringing, they're just a natural thing. They would happen, but... then there is a big idea in here. These things would never happen if they never had a creator, if
exactly.
there was not a bus behind all of these apps that have been created.
Yes, yes. And that all depicts the knowledge, the power, everything behind it. And you know what? The scientists, you said, the scientists used to first say your heart beats. It beats these many times, these as per the minutes. And, you know, they calculated it. Heart is doing the zikr. All the time, reciting his name all the time. Can't you see
So here
him?
It is. Go to your heart to see God.
Listen to your heartbeat.
That's where he lives.
You know, a baby cries. Mm-hmm. Why he gets that peace in the arms of his mother? Listening to her heartbeat.
Exactly.
Actually listening to that zikr. Of
exactly.
Rab Rab.
So go back to, we found him. Go to your heart. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to IRIB English Radio. I bid you a goodbye from my end and on behalf of my whole team. Stay safe.
May Allah protect you wherever you are.
Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullah.
Wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.